That Podcast Thing presents Home Movie Club, originally recorded April 2017, episode number 3, A Whim Away.
Hello and welcome to Home Movie Club. Today we are looking at the 1994 film The Lion King. The Lion King is a Disney animation that is the first ever Disney animation done of an original story, unlike things like Pinocchio and others that came before it, which were obviously adapted. Today, I am delighted to say that once again, I am joined by Joe Carter.
Hello.
Daisy Swaffer.
Hi.
And Sammy Kelsch.
Howdy.
So, opening thoughts. I assume this isn't the first time we've all seen this film. I know with some of them, it's the first time we've seen it, but I'm sure The Lion King is famous enough that we've all seen it at least once before. But any...
Yes. This is the second time I've seen this film.
Ah, only the second time. Okay. Yes. So, Joe, any initial thoughts then on your second viewing?
I love the music. It's very iconic. I love how it opens and it's a song, but the animation just conveys exactly what it's trying to say just in that sort of 2 minutes before it hits the title sequence.
Interestingly, that's why they used that as the trailer at the time. The trailer that they had for it was literally just that opening sequence and that kind of set up the story, and they didn't feel the need to show any of the rest of the movie. That was enough.
It was done in such a way that there was never any doubt that this film was based in Africa.
Yeah.
So. Yep.
The opening chant there, you know, the ah, survivor, no, 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 I can't obviously speak African, but I just love what it translates as. I don't know if you've ever come across the translation of that chant.
Nope.
The translation is, "Here comes a lion, father. Oh yes, it's a lion. Here comes a lion, father. Oh yes, it's a lion. A lion. We're going to conquer a lion. A lion and a leopard come to this open place."
Right, okay. Awesome. So
I love that.
I'm assuming that wasn't written specifically for film and that is just something that is more traditional, but
I have no idea actually. Might be for the film or it might be something else. But I love that. It sounds really kind of profound and it kind of puts you right there and it feels like you're in Africa and what they're actually going is a lion.
It's a lion.
It's a lion.
Wouldn't you know it? There. Yeah.
Hey everybody. Would you look at that? It's a lion.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't watched it in a little while and it's just as good as I remember.
Good. And Sammy?
I think this is probably only like the third time I've actually sat down and watched the entire thing through. But it's one of those things that I think I've seen chunks of sort of down the years, so some of it was definitely a lot more well remembered than others, but that opening bit I definitely didn't get a little bit misty eyed at. Shut up.
Yeah, I think I definitely have seen this film before, but it was a long while ago, and again I've probably only seen it, this is probably only the second time I have seen it. It's one of those films I think that everybody has seen, but it's not necessarily the sort of film that we'd watched over and over again.
Unless you have a child of just the right age in your household.
Yeah.
That they're into, if they find something, they just want to watch it over and over and over and over and over again.
Yes, as a bunch of 30-something, 40-something, in my case, childless adults, it's not necessarily the sort of thing that would be watched on rotation. Animation-wise, I think it was very, very well done. Obviously, they put a lot of time into the ergonomics of how lions walk and run, and you know, from that perspective, it was very
done. Some animators actually to Africa in order to take a look at the animals and see how they moved and how they played and things.
Well, it's nice they went for the authenticity, isn't
it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of my notes from the early notes was, it's the circle of life, but why are the lions not A, asleep during the day, and B, not chowing down on all the prey animals? And that actually was...
Yeah, why are they bowing to the lion? That's just
well,
not right.
I think it's because he's the Lion King. But it does actually go into that later on in the film, saying that, yes, they are prey animals, but you have to respect the sort of their position in the world, and it's all one big linked ecosystem.
That's a very 90s message.
King Mufasa, who is played by James Earl Jones, who, I'm sorry, but to me, that voice is Darth Vader. There's no two ways around it. Is presenting himself and his brand new son to all of his subjects. The cub is presented by a mandrill called Rafiki, who in what struck me as being a very worryingly Michael Jackson-esque way was holding the baby above a large drop.
Oh.
Basically, the young lion is being taught that he is the next king. He will have ownership of all of the lands and all of the life in it. Anywhere that the light touches is yours.
Yes.
Which means that the shadow area in the far off the distance does not belong to them, which...
To be fair, the cub picks up on that very quickly.
Yeah, yeah, it's a plot device, isn't it? Daddy Lion is showing young Simba the area that he lives, explaining the circle of life, which again is where he points out that, yes, these are prey animals, but you still should respect them.
Just before that, we get the one little bit in the whole film that's in there, especially for the parents who are having to watch the film. And that's that little parenting gag when Simba's bouncing around and it's before dawn and he comes to wake them up and his mum is like, your son is awake, and his dad is like, before sunset, he's your son.
Yep.
And that's the
before
kids
the sun comes
don't
up.
Care about that. That's just there for the parents who are watching this Disney film. And
that
I like
is
that they
A
put that
plus
in.
100% a parent thing.
Yeah, I like yep. that they did that.
So we come across the protagonist, the evil guy in this, which is...
Scar.
Mufasa's younger brother, Scar, who covets the throne, but is the younger brother, and so therefore is not in a position to sort of claim the throne, and also is sort of portrayed as physically weaker than Mufasa, so therefore cannot, you know, take him on.
I think it was just because he was younger.
I'm not sure. He kind of had all this sort of, he was saying at one point he had a bad back and he wasn't as strong. And I think he's trying to...
Oh, I think he was just whining.
On their opening scene, the very first time that we meet Scar, Mufasa goes along and is annoyed at Scar for not coming along. And he says to him angrily, are you going to challenge me then? Mm. And it yeah. is the case of in actual real lions then. The leadership is attained by challenging and beating the current leader. So I think that was a yeah. kind of nod to that. Are you going to challenge yeah. me then? Gives him the opportunity that if he is more physically capable, then he can usurp his older brother.
Yeah, but he doesn't, and it's kind of brains over brawn is his strategy. So yes, obviously, you can tell he's the evil person because he's played by an English person.
I was going to say that.
Jeremy yep. Irons in his usual sort of magnificence.
But Zazu isn't evil and he's played by an English person.
Oh yeah, that Rowan Atkinson?
Yeah.
Yarp.
I hate Rowan Atkinson.
What?
I'm not a huge fan of many of Rowan Atkinson's
sure he
characters.
Likes you, Joe.
He really freaks me out. It's
what?
Mr. Bean's... It's because of Mr. Bean.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Mr.
I don't
Bean,
like
but
the
I,
Mr. Bean
but I can't watch him because it just gives me weird flashbacks and yeah.
I have to confess, I had forgotten, or indeed wasn't aware that Rowan Atkinson was actually in this film. So it was a little bit of actually a pleasant surprise when I heard his voice because it's a fairly well known voice. So so yes, Scar wants to become king. He knows that he can't do it by force, so he tries to do it by brain, and he tricks Simba and Simba's best friend Nala, who at this point is again a very young lioness, to go and explore the forbidden elephant's graveyard.
No sooner have we heard about this dark patch over here you cannot go to, it is not part of ours, immediately the manipulation of Simba to get him to go there.
I mean, come on, if somebody says to you, ooh, this dark patch is dangerous, you can't go there, and you're a kid, you're gonna be like, yeah, I'm so there.
You're a kid who's essentially being taught that bravery is a really cool thing.
Yeah.
I mean, my note at this point is, my god, elephant skulls are really weird to look at.
Yeah.
Oh my god, right? Super weird. I love them. So creepy.
So yes, they get Lord to go into the elephant graveyard, which is the area of shadow that they're not supposed to go into because it's not their land.
On the way to the elephant graveyard, though, when Zazu is flying along with Simba and Nala, I did like it when Zazu was like, getting on well there. Well, you two are betrothed after all. And the kid's reaction to that of, I can't marry her, she's my friend.
Yeah.
It's like, I thought that was quite funny.
That's pretty much what kids think when you sort of talk about things like that.
Yeah,
that was so cute. They're just like, ew!
Yeah, these things are mutually exclusive. Cannot marry my friend.
Absolutely. So yes, they're in the elephant graveyard and they get attacked by three spotted hyenas. This is the first introduction of the hyenas. However, they have the run around and then they get cornered and... Simba, who is obviously quite a young lion cub, roars his best, and it's a particularly pathetic attempt. And then he goes again, and suddenly it's a big, meaty roar.
So you say pathetic, I say cute.
Yeah, I say cute.
Pathetic? He's just a kid.
So cute, he's trying so hard, and he's like, rawr, rawr, and it's like,
It's like, do you not remember being a kid and kind of sucking at a thing?
Yeah.
So yes, convenient lion roar is convenient because suddenly it's his dad who is roaring and dad goes in and beats up the three hyenas and then basically gives Simba a good talking to, which thoroughly understandable.
Well, he starts off with only a couple of stern words and then within moments they're laughing and playing around and it's like, that's not how I remember getting told off as a kid.
No, it was sort of, you've been a bad boy. Let's go and run around and play. It's not really teaching him a lesson, is it? He's not exactly sitting on the naughty step for 3 hours or being had his favourite toy taken away.
Quite.
Yes, so all this transpires. And obviously this means that Scar's initial plan has failed, so he has to try again. So he sets a trap for his brother and nephew. So he lures Simba into a gorge and then has the hyenas drive a large herd of wildebeest into a stampede that will trample him to death. Now, I'm not an expert in any way, shape or form on African animals, but I wasn't aware that wildebeest could run down vertical cliff faces. But apparently they can.
Well, presumably that bit was a bit more of a slope.
So the wildebeest stampede and it traps young Simba on sort of little island with a tree that he's hanging onto.
This was really scary though. Like I was a mid-teenager when this came out. I can't imagine how the little kids found this scene.
No, I hated this part.
Scar runs up and tells Mufasa of Simba's predicament. Obviously, being the caring father, he rushes in to try and save him, and in doing so, although he does save the young lion's life, he ends up basically being stuck to the side of a cliff, desperately hanging on, at which point he is killed by his brother.
The first time we see an actual on-screen murder in Disney.
Is it?
Yep.
Wow.
Off-screen murder has happened. The closest we'd got before was like Bambi's mum dying to a gunshot, but this was the actual first Disney villain carries out a murder on screen.
So was Bambi's mum death off screen then, or was it just because it was a faceless?
It wasn't a Disney villain
who did it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's. I mean, I didn't even think of that, but yes, I mean, it is a fairly sort of serious...
This is a traumatising scene.
So, unfortunately, Mufasa is thrown back into the path of the herd of wildebeest. Basically, it doesn't end well. After the wildebeest have gone, Simba drops back down into the gorge and finds his father lying there, motionless and free of any kind of injuries or blood.
Well, it's all internal injuries, isn't it? It's been trampled, and it's all internal. It's fine.
It's also Disney, so, you know, you don't want to show big pools of blood, I suppose.
You don't want to go too heavy on the gore. I think that might take you out of the emotional impact of the thing.
This is where...
You'll just be like, gross, instead of, you know, this is about this kid who's lost his...
Well, he feels responsible. It's kind of heartbreaking that scene.
Well, he doesn't feel responsible at that point. It's not until Scar puts that idea in his head. At that point, he just feels just destroyed.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know what to do and pops himself underneath the paw so he's getting a hug from his dead dad.
I mean, I did think it was so blatantly flagpole that this was going to happen earlier on in the film when they were having their sort of conversation.
That foreshadowing was pretty heavy.
Yeah, I mean, you probably couldn't have made it more obvious this was going to happen if you tried. But I guess, again, it's aimed at kids, so, you know.
I don't care. I cried.
Yep, it's true. She did.
That's okay.
Only human beings cry. If you haven't cried at this, you're not a human being. So.
I didn't cry.
You're not a human being.
I cried.
You are a human being.
But I think as a 30-something, I cried from the perspective of someone who, you know, like, who kind of feels more in line with, like, the dad's demographic, and I'm like, oh my god, now I'm just scared of my own future hypothetical unborn non-existent child being orphaned someday because I fall off a cliff. And then I just bawled my eyes out.
Well, then you should stay away from cliffs.
Yes, and Will Beast.
I think the plan is, you know, yeah, I'm just going to stay away from cliffs and wildebeest.
Yeah, Mufasa is dead. Obviously, this is fairly devastating for the lion cub. And yes, then Scar comes along and says, oh, this is all your fault. If anybody finds out, they're going to be really angry at you. So run away and never come back. Simba runs away, and then the hyenas are sent out to kill him because hyenas are actually working for Scar. But unfortunately for the hyenas and for Scar, Simba escapes. Probably not unfortunately for Simba.
Fortunately for Simba,
he escapes.
But the hyenas don't let on to Scar that they let him escape, though.
No. you know.
Well, because they want to live.
Yeah.
You never tell upper management when things go horribly wrong. That's always the way forward in business.
That is a rookie mistake. Yeah.
So Simba escapes, but Scar goes back to the Pride and tells them all that Mufasa and Simba were both killed. So therefore, obviously, he is now king. And in his first move of dickbaggery, even, you know, without giving them time to think, he suddenly allows a large pack of hyenas to live in the Pride Lands as well. Because initially, the hyenas were always living on the outskirts and weren't allowed onto the Pride Lands. They now can move in at will. So, I don't know if there's some sort of immigrant allegory there or not. I don't know, but possibly not.
That's a good point, actually. I hadn't really thought of that.
Yeah.
No. Wait.
But yeah, like, oh, this is our delicate balance and we mustn't let anyone else in. And if someone else comes in, it destroys everything. That is a bit...
That's some unfortunate implication right there.
Yeah. I don't like that.
I'm not sure that was the intention, but...
No, possibly not. Perhaps me just reading into it. So Simba has escaped from the Pride Lands, but is forced to run along in a desert and collapses due to lack of water and just basically lack of energy. Where he is rescued by Timon and Pumbaa, the comedy relief, Meerkat and Warthog.
Yay, Nathan Lane.
Yay, the other one.
Yay, the other one.
Who's not Nathan Lane.
The one who's not Nathan Lane, but does a good job.
I'm going to go with, yay, Hakuna Matata.
Yep. So basically, they rescue him.
For the rest of your days. Oh, what's the next line?
I don't know.
Problem free, thank you. Philosophy. Hakuna Matata.
Yeah, basically no worries, even if your father's just died. So, yeah, she's rescued by the comedy relief and ends up growing up in the jungle with his two friends, which...
Very quickly.
In such a way that he can be in complete and utter total denial of anything about his life beforehand, which is obviously what he thinks he needs. He needs to just go, I'm going to pretend none of that happened, and I'm just going to hang out with these guys now and hope we never fall out.
It's all cool.
And brings up so many questions about the lifespans of meerkats and warthogs and cats.
Suspend your disbelief, Sunshine.
Yes, okay.
I mean, also... Most meerkats and warthogs don't do complicated song and dance numbers.
Generally.
That you know of.
I have yet to meet any that speak English.
Young adult Simba, living with his two friends, eating bugs. Oddly enough, not suffering from malnutrition.
Because lions are...
Of protein, honey.
Yeah, well, yeah, but they're carnivores.
They also don't live in forests.
Well,
if you just eat
a really high volume of grubs and ants instead of, like, you know...
I'm going to assume that Simba does actually catch some kind of pumba-sized animals as well and eats those because he grows up quite big.
Maybe he's just hoovering, like, bin bags full of ants.
Maybe he's sneaking off at night and just, you know, catching the rest of Pumba's family and eating them.
Oh my god, Daisy!
I've gone dark now.
So creepy.
That's nice. Really vicious.
I mean, you're just unraveling the entire sort of universe of this film.
But it's fine because it's all the circle of life, so we're good.
Yeah, we're told early on that is fine.
Yep, because you eat the animals and then you turn into grass.
Yep.
slightly, you know, shortened version of how it works, but...
Well, we don't need an entire sort of scientific discussion of how, you know, sort of bodies decompose and yada, yada, yada.
True. So, Simba and the two comic relief, Timon and Pumbaa, are off doing... Well, this is the point where we have the one song that got stuck in my head, which is a really annoying, is basically the Lion Sleeps Tonight, is the sort of Western most well-known version, so the A Whim Away song. Thankfully not in it for very long, because...
Don't make me sing it.
No one needs to sing it, please. No one sing it. So, yeah, during that bit, there is... Pumbaa is attacked by a hungry lioness who apparently Scar's rule is so terrible that they're sending out lionesses to hunt in further and further distances. Lionesses being sent out to hunt is, I believe, technically correct. That is what happens.
Yep.
Science.
Science on that point works out. However, Simba rescues the two friends from the lioness, who turns out to be Nala, who is the young lioness that was in the elephant graveyard with him, you know. Convenience.
His little friend.
His fiancé.
Simba and Nala are reunited and within 5 minutes fall in love.
Yes.
In one night of romantic.
If that like earlier montage is anything to be believed, this is the first girl he's seen in years.
Actually, that's fair, because he's not exactly living around other lions, is he?
And he already has a good, you know, rapport and connection with her.
Yeah, but again, you know, you can be a childhood friend, doesn't mean you're going to marry them.
I didn't marry any of my childhood friends.
No, there's plenty of childhood friends I would not want to marry.
Bet you weren't betrothed to any of those, though.
No, true, but then that's also a slightly weird sort of concept for a bunch of lions. So yeah. Nala comes back into Simba's life and she explains that everything has gone to heck at home. Somehow the Pride Lands have become a drought-stricken wasteland because nothing says ecological disaster like a bunch of hyenas. Mm-hmm. Again, I didn't quite get that because hyenas are carrion eaters, so they don't kill anything usually. They just, you know, pick off corpses.
I beg to differ.
Really?
Yeah, in my reading around following watching The Lion King yesterday, it said that lions are also carrion animals, and hyenas and lions kind of, they both kill things and they'll both eat each other's kill. But more often than the other way around, it'll be lions that eat the kill that the hyenas have done.
Yeah, okay. Hmm. And that has made our educational quotient for this podcast.
Yeah. Well, I read around all this stuff when we do these home movie clip things. I'm just like, let's find out loads of facts.
If my childhood visits to African Lion Safari in Hamilton, Ontario are any indication, lions like to take naps. And various, you know, sort of monkeys and other primate types like to climb onto the front windscreen of my grandfather's Buick wood paneled station wagon and sit there and not move. And as a traumatized 10-year-old, you're sat there with a ridiculously close up view of a rainbow butt. So,
but they
you know.
Didn't put that in this movie for some reason.
Yeah, oddly enough, there wasn't any rainbow-butted monkeys sitting on cars
in
this film.
Yeah. Strangely, no footage of my grandfather attempting to sort of, like, you know, go forward slightly and then jam on the brakes repeatedly to try and shake it off the car, which it was completely unfazed by. My God.
So, yes.
we almost drove it home.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Nala tries to urge Simba to return home to claim his kingship. However, he still feels ridiculously guilty about his father's death and says no and storms off like a petulant child. I guess to this extent he probably is because he's not that old.
Yeah, he's like a teenager now, isn't he? So yeah. He's allowed his bouts of, oh, I don't want to.
He's angsty.
I hate everything.
Yeah.
You don't understand me. Don't wanna.
So he storms off and he encounters Rafiki, who is the monkey that we saw earlier dropping him, not dropping him off the side of a mountain. Again, I have no idea how long these monkeys live for, but it seems to be a very long time.
But before that, Rafiki has like a precog moment that he realizes, he reads like some ashes and realizes that Simba's still alive. That's
yeah,
how
he catches
he
the
ends
stuff
up
on
there.
The wind, yeah.
Yeah.
So he knew Simba was alive and he's obviously gone wandering out to try and find him. I really quite liked the bit in this scene, though, where Rafiki whacks Simba on the head with the stick. And Simba's like, yep. What? Ah, that hurt. And he's like, well, it doesn't matter. It's in the past. And he's like, but it hurt. Well, the past can hurt. What we can do is we can run from it or we can learn from it. And he whacks the stick at him again, but Simba ducks. And he learned from it. And it's like, okay, that's actually a pretty huge life lesson illustrated in this, like, 20-second bit in this film. Mm.
I really liked that bit. But it was also funny that then Simba went, well, I'm going to take the stick and runs off with the stick.
Yeah. It's perfectly
now
reasonable.
You can't hit me with it at all.
Yeah.
Yep, two life lessons were in there. One, duck, and two, disarm whenever possible.
Yes.
Yes, and it's at this point that Simba gets visited by the ghost of his dad. This to me was even harder because they put an echo on his dad's voice. So it basically was Darth Vader. Remember.
Simba, I am your father.
It's like, oh, God.
And the fact that he's kind of, it's kind of like the, you know, sort of, Lion society spiritual version of a force ghost. So
I mean, James Earl Jones, I'm sure, has done many, many things in his time, but if you just get his voice, that's all it is.
You see, just... now in 1994, when this film came out, obviously I had seen Star Wars lots of times, but when I heard Mufasa, I didn't associate it with Darth Vader at all. And
it was
like 10 years later or something that I found out that it was James Earl Jones that had voiced Mufasa, and I was like, hang on, isn't James Earl Jones Darth Vader? I don't remember it being Darth Vader's voice. So I think it's more, because you're really familiar with Vader, and you're, as an adult, you're watching it more, like, being aware of the voice actors behind it, less immersed in it than you are when you're a kid.
I don't know. If I'd have seen this as a kid, it would have been, 94 would have been, you know, I would have been, admit this, 21. I had seen Star Wars several hundred times by that point, if not several thousand times. So, you know, even if I saw this when it came out, it would have been Darth Vader. But that, again, is the perspective of seeing Star Wars so many times.
But it's not quite Darth Vader's the thing, because obviously his delivery and his character is different. To me, it's like if Darth Vader, you know, if everything had gone super super nice and you know, Darth Vader had just been like a proper dad instead of terrible.
He's like jokey and friendly and warm. And I think that's why it never connected as Vader to me as well.
Yeah, he feels like a, you know, a good dad and a stand-up guy instead of, you know, a sort of wheezy, evil, bad lightsaber man whose life didn't go the way that he'd planned.
So Simba gets basically taught a lesson and decides to go home. Can no longer run from his past, goes home, and with his friends acting as live bait, which is always a dangerous thing to do, he managed to sneak past the hyenas.
Good strategy.
And confront Scar.
But they did it in a comedy way, so you know that they were going to be fine.
Yes, they did it in a very
much hula skirts and stuff, which was disturbing.
Inexplicable. Inexplicable hula skirts, because obviously these people in Africa know an awful lot about hula.
Well, it was originally meant to be like Saturday Night Fever dance, but Nathan Lane, when he was reading his lines, kind of ad-libbed, what do you want me in? Hula, in drag doing the hula, and so they made it so he was in drag doing the hula.
So yes, they sneak past the hyenas and Simba confronts Scar. We get the whole, actually no, it's your fault the father died, and then they have a bit of a fight, and it was revealed what we already know, which is that Scar actually murdered Mufasa, it wasn't actually Simba's fault. And then there is
Scar
the
is
world's
bad lion.
Slowest motion cat fight known to man.
He just couldn't help actually gloating before finishing off Simba in that classic villain mistake way.
That is such a classic villain
mistake. Yes, we mentioned earlier the whole twiddling moustache villains, and very much, although obviously in the form of a lion, that is the character that Jeremy Irons is playing here. It is very much a twiddling moustache, you know, evil.
Masterfully playing, I might add. Jeremy
Irons. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Absolutely makes the character of Scar.
So he gets beaten by Simba. Simba banishes him as opposed to killing him, which, you know, again, probably, you know, you have to do that when you're a Disney film.
But that whole scene with the fight, like the lions are fighting the hyenas and Simba is fighting Scar, and it's really quite violent scene. Like, they're properly fighting, but then we have Timon and Pumbaa there being all comedy-y, and it's like, oh, it's fine, all the violence, because these two, they're funny, so it's all fine.
It's there to balance out, certainly.
Yeah.
So, oddly enough, although banished, Scar then reattacks, but Simba tosses him from the top of the rock, which doesn't kill him, but leaves him surrounded by hyenas who have decided that he is not exactly the best person to hang around with.
And the fire is coming in at that point as well, which
yes,
we never see the hyenas again. So I'm like, did the fire kill off all the hyenas then?
Maybe they just ran away and got scared and kept running and moved to Australia and they're fine. And they started a taco truck.
Or they just went back to their previous home.
Or they were all murdered by fire.
Or they were all indeed cooked and everybody had barbecued hyena for the next 4 days.
That would keep them going for a while because at that point there's still no me, even though Simba's come
this
back.
This is true.
So eat the hyenas.
So the hyenas are dispatched in one way or the other, whether they leave or whether they're eaten. There is a, as we said, lightning strike that sets fire to pretty much the entire land. And as we know in real life, fire is the great renewer. So there's fire, then there's rain, and then there is undoubtedly a period of hardship where there is no food and everybody dies. But everybody is back to normal. So
and it's the circle of life.
And the circle of life, so everybody's back to it. Simba is now king. Nala has given birth to a newborn cub. And again, as was with the very first shot, they have Rafiki lifting the newborn cub, who I don't believe gets a name. So I'm going to name him.
He's not going to name
him. I name him Brian.
I wonder if... I haven't seen any of the sequels, but there's been several sequels to this film, and I wonder if they focus on the cub.
Is there actual sequels?
Actual sequels, yeah.
Yes. There's like Lion King 2.
There's Lion King
Electric
3.
Boogaloo.
There was Lion King 1 and a
Lion
half
Lion King
as well.
1 and a half?
Yep.
Okay, so we don't know what the child's name is, but...
He's called Fluffy.
What?
Is he?
Are you serious?
No. It says... I just found an article.
No,
like...
according to this, it's Kiara.
Yeah, but
it's
the placeholder name was Fluffy.
Oh, wow.
that's amazing.
So, yes, they lift the child up and show them to the assembled animals, and we basically go back to the start of the film, almost as if it's a circle of some sort. And that's the film, really. We get gifted with, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Elton John singing the song Circle of Life, isn't it?
No,
he sings?
No, it's Can You Feel the Love Tonight that...
Oh, yes, so he sings Can You Feel the Love Tonight.
So Can You Feel the Love Tonight is the song that won the Oscar for Best Original Song from the 1994 period. And they had actually not included that in the film just a few weeks before it was due to open and Elton John had been invited to a preview screening. And they didn't have that song in the film at all. They just, you know, that bit where you were saying it felt a bit rubbish. Yeah, they didn't have that. And he kind of canvassed them to include it because he's like, no, it's really important stuff. Please include my song. I might win an Oscar for it. I want the song in. And so they included the song and then he won the Oscar.
Yeah. It's a very memorable song. It's just, in fact, as I said before, when they were actually doing the bit where... Simba and Nala at the bit where they fall in love, they're singing the song, and to me it sounded wrong because it wasn't actually Elton John singing it. I think it's one where Elton John's version of it is so, you know, so popular and so sort of the one that everybody knows that
it's become so well known.
It was originally storyboarded as being Timon and Pumbaa singing the whole song as well. Which kind of surprised Elton John when he heard about that, because that was not how he imagined it when he wrote it.
No, that's fair enough. It's a slightly odd way of working it. So yes, the film ends pretty much how it began, with the circle of life being complete and the next generation being presented to the world. Sammy, do you want to quickly go through your slightly amusing anecdote?
So basically, there was this post circulating around the Tumblrverse a while back about theatrical mishaps, and one of them involved a production of The Lion King, the musical.
Yeah.
There's two bits of pre-record in the musical performance. One of them is the bit at the end where the Force Ghost of Mufasa appears to Simba and says, "Remember," that whole sort of Yoda sequence. And the other one is a bit where Pumbaa does a really big fart. Okay. You can probably see where I'm going with this. So they get to the bit with the big moving sequence of, sort of Force Ghost of Mufasa appears to his son, says this big, is supposed to say this big moving speech and be like, "Remember, remember." And instead what just comes out is...
Oh, no. That's got to spoil the bit of it.
And the cast loses it and runs off stage.
Yep. Pumbaa is the first Disney character to have flatulence. That's a little
and I for one applaud and am grateful
There's
for that.
There's nothing like a good running fart joke to keep the kids amused.
Yep.
And some of the adults.
Yes. And quite a few of the adults, yes, definitely. Myself included.
For me, what really made this movie was the quality of the voice cast. But yet, two of the voice actors, I really didn't feel like they went with the characters. And that was Matthew Broderick and Moira Kelly, who was the adult Simba and adult Nala. All the rest of them were so absolutely fantastic. I think it's the only time I've seen Whoopi Goldberg playing a baddie as well. But absolutely,
she did a fantastic job.
High quality. Even the kids' voices were so good. And then I just really felt that those two never fitted with the characters right for me.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think I definitely preferred the voice of kid Nala to grown up Nala. She had fantastic character.
Yeah, the problem I had with grown Nala was not the fact that it wasn't necessarily with the character. It was the fact that it was a voice that I knew from elsewhere.
I know her from The West Wing.
Exactly, yeah. Because she played Mandy on The West Wing, and that was just... That's the only other thing I've known her in. And then suddenly she was this voice of like, "You're not a lioness, you're a slightly sarky sort of one-series-only member of the West Wing cast."
And it was her normal speaking voice that she was using for Nala, so it didn't sound any different to Mandy on The West Wing.
Yeah. I mean, as a general rule, I mean, it's a Disney film, so obviously they've got some financial might behind them, but they did get a fairly stellar cast. The animation was, well, it's Disney, so it was definitely top-notch. Some of the detail and some of the way that they rendered the animals moving was just,
The stampede that they did, the big wildebeest stampede, was something that was 3 years in the making, because they had write a whole new software program to be able to handle it, so that the animals weren't, like, crossing into
this
each
is 94, so we're talking before the work done on sort of...
Ants and Bug's Life and
ants,
things.
And even things like Lord of the Rings, where they developed an awful lot for the crowd fights there.
Yeah.
So this is before that. So, it was spectacular in many ways, even if they did have them going directly downhill.
Disney weren't really expecting this to be a big hit, though. They were putting most of their eggs in the Pocahontas basket for the following year. And this was like the small release that they were putting out the year before Pocahontas. And then this was the massive success, and Pocahontas kind of was meh at the box office.
This goes to show you can't always tell what what you're going to produce is going to be, hit the zeitgeist of the time. So
these things are difficult to predict.
Yeah.
It's kind of commonly thought that this one's based on Hamlet, which is an unusual thing for a Disney movie to be, inspired by, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very much an original story, obviously, but it is inspired by several different things.
I'm just glad it doesn't have, like, the Hamlet ending.
Yeah!
Can I remember what the Hamlet ending is?
Everybody dies!
Spoiler alert, everyone dies!
Okay, cool. Well, technically speaking, everybody in this dies, but it's not at this point in time.
But only in the circle of life.
That's the circle of life. Yes, everybody dies and is reborn as a tree or something.
Close enough, sweetheart.
Well, I found myself singing along with all the songs in this, and I still love them so much. The version that we watched, assuming that you watched my DVD, was the special edition version, so you will have got an extra song in it.
Which was the extra song?
It was
the Morning Report. This is the Morning Report.
Oh yeah, I didn't think I recognized that.
I was so confused. I was so confused because I was like, I feel like I would have at least vaguely remembered seeing this the first two times I saw this film. And I had no recollection of it. And that's why. Thank you.
Yeah, I really like that scene as well.
Oh my god.
It's got Simba being like taught stalking and hunting by Mufasa as well, which I think is a really nice bonding moment between parent and child there. And so I really like that scene in the movie.
It's so cute. It's such a cute bit of the movie.
It's a shame
I'm glad
it wasn't
that we
in
got
the
to
theatrical version.
Right, so any final thoughts? Daisy?
Well, for me, this is a film that I absolutely loved as a kind of mid-teenager, and it's never lost that for me, and the songs, I think, have stood the test of time. They're still really good. The animation doesn't feel dated, and the story is still great, so I still love this movie.
I can agree with that. Joe?
Yeah, I don't think I saw this when it came out. I think I saw it at university sometime, and I did. I really like it. I didn't see a lot of the early Disney ones. I think Basil and the Great Mouse Detective, which is not. I think it's a Disney.
Yes, I think so.
Basil the Great Mouse Detective. I remember that's the. I think that's the first Disney one I remember seeing. I love
just,
that.
Just to point out that you said you didn't see this when it came out. You saw this at university. I was at university when this came out, so.
Yeah, but you're older than I am.
I'm older than anybody.
I was just going into teenagehood, so yeah, Disney wasn't really on my mind at that point. So I don't believe I saw it when it came out. But you know, watching it again, as Daisy said, it stood the test of time. It's a really good film, and I really enjoyed it. And
absolutely.
I love the music.
Yeah, and Sammy.
I still love this film. As I guess the baby of this podcast right now, I was probably just in the sort of appropriate age range for it being, oh God, 10 when it was released.
Aww.
So young.
And it's one that I think really, I think just hit at the right time for me, in terms of when it came out that I was able to appreciate it at that point, sort of unironically. Which, if I'd been a few years older, I would have appreciated, ironically. And so in that way, I just still have a genuine love for it. And going back and watching it again gave me a lot more emotions than I thought I was going to have about it. Mm. So that was neat.
Cool. Personally, I enjoyed it, don't get me wrong. There was more music in it than I remember, and that's not just one song that I hadn't seen before. But no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. There was no point where it seemed it was dragging. I mean, it's a fairly short film, so there wasn't any padding, and it moved along at a fairly swift rate. And no, it was good. I enjoyed it. Again, so much better than my sort of experience of watching Rocky. So, two thumbs up for that.
I have to say, one of the points definitely in this film's favor is the fact that it runs at 85 minutes. That's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, the pacing's
not
brilliant.
Every epic film needs to be 9 hours long. It tells the story that it wants to tell in a nice space of time that you don't feel like you need two bathroom breaks, you know, sort of at intervals through it.
Yeah, I think that's the benefit of being a kids' film is obviously it's not going to be 2.5-3 hours long because the little ones don't have that attention span.
Hell, I don't have that attention span.
No, me neither. Oh my god.
Sorry, what were we doing? Sorry, I got distracted. It was an enjoyable film, and yep, it was the right length, and technically it was very good, and voice acting wise was good, and most of the songs were good. So no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So yes.
We have a winner.
Yes, so far that's possibly the first one we've all thoroughly enjoyed.
Yay!
Well done, Disney.
It was bound to happen at some point.
Yeah. So moving on to next time, it is going to be Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Again, a different tone to Lion King, obviously, but hopefully just as enjoyable. So for now, I'd like to say thank you to my co-hosts. Thank you, Joe.
Bye.
Thank you, Daisy.
Thank you.
And thank you, Sammy.
Laters.
And thank you and goodbye from myself. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Home Movie Club, part of the That Podcast Thing Network. Find us on Twitter at podcast_thing and on Facebook by searching for That Podcast Thing. Please like and subscribe for news of our future episodes coming soon.